Hello, Audio Boo. Today is the Friday the 13th, ha ha ha, the 13th day of February and the 13th day of the February Challenge. And today I am recording this Audio Boo from my PC. The reason being that those of you who have been following my boobs for a while will have noticed that I have been putting up some classical pieces in the last few days. And I thought long and hard about how much or what I was going to say here on the subject. And I thought I would tell the story that would merit putting the classical piece in with the rest of the boo because it's relevant. So today, it won't be a separate one. So I hope that those of you who are interested in my classical stuff will also listen to this. Most of it will be talking, obviously, because this is what the Audio Boo February Challenge is, talking about different things. But it will end with a piece. So today's topic is superstition. Are we superstitious? What are some of the things we do? Do we believe in things that are, quote, paranormal? Do we believe in telepathy? You know, for me, this is a very complicated question because as far as I'm concerned, a lot of things that people would consider paranormal are normal to me. And that's because I've always been a bit of a weird person. Since I am very attuned to energy, people's auras, you know, telepathy. I wouldn't call it telepathy, but I obviously do believe that you can sense what someone is thinking or what someone is going to do just by the type of energy that they project. And that's why I think, you know, people who go to like mediums and things like that, if it's a good medium, that's what they're picking up on. It's not that they know everything. It's if they're attuned to the right, kind of like the right frequency, kind of like tuning a radio. If they're attuned to your frequency and they can tune into people's frequencies, then they will know. Maybe not in details, but they will know general things. And that's how it works. It just takes someone who's a bit more sensitive and a bit more in tune. It's not some seriously crazy powers. I think we all have the potential to do it, and I think we're all born with it. I think that just some of us lose it or block it out throughout our lives. For, you know, we become cynical, we become jaded. Me too, but not in this regard. I think that nature provides us with everything that we need. All we need to know, we can find out if we are attuned to the right, if we tune the radio to the right station, so to speak. And that's how we can tell what someone is thinking or what someone is feeling or, you know, what's going to happen, premonitions. And I will talk about premonitions. I had a very powerful one. I've had quite a few in my life, but something very tangible. And that's why I chose to play the piece that I'm going to play. So for me, this is a very common thing. This is something that I deal with on, you know, kind of every day. First of all, as someone who kind of walks the, what people like to call the pagan path, for me, it's basically just tuned to the elements. And also, for someone who deals with Reiki, as I do, that's being tuned to the right frequency. Now, funnily enough, for those of you who are of the Christian persuasion, I think you may want to listen just because it's a really interesting story, what I'm going to tell you, because I believe that, you know, that all paths are right for the people who choose them and are convinced of their kind of their truth. It's very hard for me to explain it. Like, if you are, you know, if you believe in something spiritual, then that's your, you know, and you believe that that's the truth, then that is the truth for you. The reason why I say, those of you who are Christian may want to hear this, because it's a really interesting thing. This is the story and the premonition I'm going to tell you is quite a Christian in nature. I mean, you'll see what I mean. It's not to offend anyone. It's nothing bad at all. It's just something really kind of strange that I can't explain. But just because I can't explain it in regular terms doesn't mean that it doesn't have any explanation, you know. So I don't know if I like the word superstitious. Yes, there are certain things that I do. Like if I go to visit someone at a cemetery, let's say if I go to visit my father at the cemetery, you know, because he died 16 years ago, I will, of course, you know, dress up, wear nice clothes to the cemetery, clean clothes, whatever. But the minute I get home, I will throw them in the wash and go have a shower and wash my hair. Not because I think the cemetery is dirty, but because I feel the need to wash that kind of energy and replace it with water, which symbolizes life to me. Something that's not stagnant, something that's flowing, something that's, you know. So to me, I cannot stay. If I'm out of the cemetery and I'm going home, I can't stay in the same clothes. I have to take them off and change. I have to have a shower. It's something that I've always done. I can't explain why. It's just a feeling. It's not even about superstition. I don't think something's going to happen to me. You know what I mean? I just think that I need to replace that stagnant thing, the death. You know, it's such a deep thing. And with you know, walking in a cemetery and having all these, you know, all these dead, you know, having the dead around you. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just, you know, they still have energy. They're still presence. I feel the need to replace that with life and with motion and with flowing rather than stagnation. So, you know, that's kind of like a quote superstitious unquote thing that I do, even though I don't consider it superstitious. I just feel that it's the right thing to do. What other weird things do I do? I do weird things all the time. You know, I have my little things that I do during the or for the solstices and the sun feasts. At the same time, I do celebrate Christmas. I don't know. I don't have a lot of things that I would call superstitious. I don't. Not in the conventional way. So I'm a bit of a strange. I'm very connected to the spiritual world and the spirits. Let's say seances. I believe that you can. I have done seances myself. I believe that is a messy business that you shouldn't deal with. I believe that there's only certain times of the year that is okay to try and connect. The 31st of October into the 1st of November is the best day to connect, probably. That's Samhain, or, you know, what's known in the commercial world as Halloween, but it's not really Halloween as far as I'm concerned. It's Samhain. It's okay to connect, but it's not okay to just do seances, and because I believe that, you know, it's people do it as a game at parties and stuff, and they don't know what they're dealing with, because there are messages, I think, that come through sometimes, and you need to, and some things, you know, and some things are just, you need to let those who have passed on rest, because that's what they need to do. And when you disturb them, you should be ready for the consequences. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to haunt you. That's not the kind of thing I mean. But you might not be ready for the kind of messages that you get. And or you might get very, very cryptic messages that are going to bug you, and it's going to confuse you. What I mean is, I don't think that people should play with that stuff. And not unless they're really ready to cope with what that stuff's going to say, because I don't think it's just BS. I think there's some truth to it if you know how to do it. And it's a lot more serious than people think. That's what I think. Anyway, let me tell you, I've had quite a few premonitions in my life. Things that have come true, things that I knew that happened before they happened. Sometimes I know what people are going to say before they say it. Not always. I'm not this kind of all-knowing person. Believe me, I don't know anything. To tell you the truth, I hardly know, you know, I hardly know what my name is sometimes. But, and there's a lot of things I don't know. But there are ways, you know, sometimes you do get a sense of things. Now, let me tell you this story. This story happened in 2005, in April 2005, the beginning of April. Now, this might interest some of the Christians, and especially Catholics, but not just. This was when Pope John Paul II was not well, and you know, and kind of like the whole world was, you know, Christians, not Christians, whatever. Everybody, you know, the Pope is a figure, political and otherwise, that's you know, quite looked. You know what happens. You know, when there's a new pope, you know, it's an influential figure, whether we subscribe to the persuasion or not. It doesn't really matter. We know that the pope is a figure that's distinguished and is important in the Christian and the political world. And even though John Paul II said a lot of things that I could not agree with, there were some things that made me really like him. I can't explain what it was. I thought he was quite enlightened for his time. Probably not as enlightened as the present one. But, you know, I thought he was okay. And I actually really liked him. And I liked listening to him speak. And just before he died, and I remember this very well. I remember listening to the funeral. It was broadcast here. I also remember that he came to Israel a couple of years before he died, and he gave a sermon, and it was quite amazing. And me and a couple of friends wanted to go, but we couldn't get transport up to the Nazareth area. Anyway, it was quite clear that he wasn't well, and it was a matter of time till, you know, he was going to not be with us any longer. And at the time that he was ill, during the last few days, you know, of his life, or the last couple of weeks, this was at a pretty high time in my career. I had quite a bit of work, and I was working on, I was engaged in doing this concert with the Jerusalem Symphony and another, you know, conductor. We were singing the Pergolesi Stabat Mater and the Haydn Stabat Mater. We were rehearsing it for quite a while. And on the day he died, now I'm trying to think if it was the 2nd of April or the 5th of April. I don't remember. I remember it was a Saturday. I remember that very well. It was a Saturday night, and we had a,
Second of April,
2005. I think. Yeah. I just remember the day, the circumstance. We were in Jerusalem, and we had the final concert of this series, 2nd of April, Saturday night. And, you know, it was getting close. We all kind of knew, we were listening to the radio, and we all kind of knew that it was coming, but we didn't know when. As far as the doctors were concerned, you know, it could have been, it could have, you know, could have, could take a few more days or whatever. Now, the Stabat Mater, for those of you who don't know, is a sacred work, and it describes the mother, obviously the mother of Christ, standing at the foot of the cross, and you know, seeing what is happening to him and all her pain, and you know, talking about other things, and it ends in an uplifting note, you know, about saying, you know, basically the body is gone, but the soul is, you know, going to be in heaven, whatever. But it's not just that. It goes, it's quite a long text, and in Latin, and quite a few composers have set that to music. Pergolesi is one of the famous ones, and Haydn is also a lovely one. Now, Pergolesi is is set for soprano, alto, and an orchestra. What was the alto soloist? The Haydn one is lovely. It's also, it's beautiful. I love them both. Pergolesi has a very special place in my heart. But the Haydn one is a longer work, and it's a more complex work. It's set for orchestra, choir, and four soloists, obviously, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. And I was the alto soloist. Now, each of these works has about three alto arias. It's got some duets. The Haydn one has a quartet. Now, the Haydn one is very hard, and the alto actually has to work quite hard. One of the more poignant points of the Haydn is an alto aria. I think it's the last alto aria that occurs in the second part of the piece, and it's a very slow, and that's where the alto earns her keep. It's hard, very hard to sing aria because of the phrasing. It's long, it's sad, and it's very moving. If you do it wrong, you could bore everyone to death, but if you do it right, then it's the most moving piece, the most moving aria of the piece. And I don't remember a lot. I remember it went very well. The whole thing went very well. And I don't remember how the first part went. Obviously, it went okay. But I remember when it came to me singing this aria now, the orchestra is obviously seated. The choir, bless them, they have to stand on these kind of risers behind the orchestra. For those of you who can't see and don't know what usually a concert like that is, how it's set up and looks like. So the chorus is usually standing at, you know, the back part of the stage. In front of them, there's the orchestra. If you're facing the audience, the first violins are on your left, the second violins are on your right, strings behind them, a couple of cellos, and a couple of instruments behind them. The soloists stand in front of the strings, And again, if you're facing the audience, usually this is the traditional settings. People do veer from this, but the traditional setting. On the left side, in front of the first violins, you have your bass and tenor standing. Then there's a conductor's podium. And then, and the conductor, of course, has got his butt to the audience. And the alto, then closest to his podium, and then the soprano. And we have chairs because we sit during the choral parts. We stand up when we have to sing. So we stand up during arias, duets, and quartets. Now, usually the chorus can't sit down because there's no scope for putting all these chairs. So usually they remain standing. The conductor, of course, the orchestra is seated, and the conductor obviously is standing on his podium. That's just the scene. The theater is packed, the big Jerusalem theater, the Henry Crown Auditorium, packed, sold out. Saturday night, quite late Saturday night because it's after the Sabbath. Not late, but, you know, after 8 o'clock. When we started. So this is the second half of the concert, the second half of the second half, so a bit after 9. And, you know, and along comes the aria, the alto aria. And of course, this is where I earn my keep. I mean, all the other ones that came before it are great, but this is the challenging point. This is the whole piece rests on this aria, because you'll hear it, but you'll see why. It's very dramatic, very beautiful. Unfortunately, I don't have, well, probably fortunately, I don't have a recording of myself doing it. So this is a commercial recording, but and it goes really quiet, and I start to sing this aria. And this whole time, I'm imagining this kind of white, and I don't know where that came from, but I could almost see. Now, I can't see, obviously, because I'm vision impaired. I'm almost completely, totally blind. A white bird or butterfly or something with white wings, or something white fluttering above my head when I'm singing this. And kind of flying around. And I knew when I was singing this, I felt that he had passed on. I felt it. I don't know how to explain it. It was a knowledge. It was just a knowledge. It was like someone told me. And it was really, and I almost broke down in tears when I sang it, because it was so powerful, and it was such a powerful point in the work. And it seemed to me an amazing spiritual experience. I felt so close to some kind of belief at that point that I never felt that in my life before or since. And when we came off stage at the end, I said, "He's dead." And a lot of people, you know, the backstage crew was listening to the radio and was also watching us, but there was a TV there, and they said, "Yeah, you're right," because we were just talking about him before we went on stage. "How do you know?" I said, "I don't know." Anyway, when we calculated, the message from the Vatican came basically almost exactly at the time when I started singing that aria. I don't know why it happened like that, but that was one of the most powerful things that has ever happened to me in terms of premonition and some kind of spiritual thing. And I remember crying because it was so powerful. I'll play the aria now, and I'll see you on the 14th of February. Thank you.
Thank you.